96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
Okay, in keeping with my commitment to the community to bring information timely, I don't have comprehensive details. What I can say is that there does appear to be a history of domestic incidents, and they span multiple jurisdictions.
That's Prince George's County Police Chief Hank Stawinski today discussing some of the details surrounding the killing of Corporal Mujahid Ramzadin. A domestic violence incident appears to be at the center of today's tragic events. That is often considered the most dangerous call for responding officers. And tonight we are talking about that issue and the impact it continues to have on our community. We begin tonight with Mark Spencer, Inspector General with the Prince George's County Sheriff's Department. Now, if you have a comment, if you have a question, we'd like to hear from you tonight as we continue to digest the difficult events of the day. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Mr. Spencer, thank you so much for joining us.
And good evening, Harold, and thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for spending some time with us. I want to first express, you know, our condolences for the loss of this officer to all of our men and women who are sworn to protect and serve, as well as, you know, our public servants that often support them. This is a tragedy of immense proportions. Let's talk a little bit first and foremost about kind of the circumstances surrounding an incident like this. The Sheriff's Department has a dedicated unit that deals specifically with domestic violence incidents. Talk to me a bit about that, Mr. Spencer.
Well, first of all, let me thank you for stating a very important point, and that is that domestic violence incidents result in some of the greatest injury and loss of life to law enforcement officers across the country. And our sheriff's deputies, as you said, do that work every day. I want to take a moment just to express our condolences to the family and friends of Officer Ramzadin. We knew him when we were inside the Prince George's County Police Department, and we are grieving his loss. I also want to make sure that I mention our deputy, Nicholas Romanchik, who was brutally attacked yesterday during the service of an emergency psychiatric petition in the College Park area. And so he's recovering, and we're grateful for that. And we're grateful for all the expressions of support that we've received for Officer Romanchik. And as you said, we specialize in domestic violence response in Prince George's County. We have what's called the DVID, the Domestic Violence Intervention Division. And we provide a 360-degree service for the victims of domestic violence. And that picture looks like this. We are first responders. That means we respond to 911 calls in Police District 3, which is the Landover area. And so when you make that 911 call, chances are that a sheriff's deputy will show up for a complaint of domestic violence. But beyond that, we are responsible for serving all court-issued protective orders and peace orders across Prince George's County. Once we do that work, we have a unit comprised of what we call Special Victim Assistance, SVAs, and they are experts trained in how to assist victims of domestic violence and how to access resources. We give court assistance, and they help educate victims about how the system works, how they can protect themselves, and even to the point where we offer to escort victims to and through the court process to help them break that cycle of violence.
Let me ask you, why are domestic violence responses so dangerous for officers?
Well, I think domestic violence is dangerous just in and of itself, and we're learning much more. One of the things that we're learning from the numbers is that when officers respond, that's usually a point where the victim in particular has made a decision to either end the relationship or seek assistance through the courts or through a social service agency. And what we're learning is that those are the times when the potential for violence may be greater. It may increase. And so that's one of the things that we're mindful for. So when law enforcement officers are responding to that call for domestic violence, the research really shows that that's a heightened opportunity for violence, particularly by the batterer.
Mm-hmm. Now, from what we understand, based on the information that we have, Corporal Ramsden was off duty, and he was asked by a neighbor to help with this domestic violence incident. And I would imagine that the same would go for any sworn officer, sheriff's deputy, city police officer, county police officer, state police officer, what have you. But in a situation like that, is there even more of a danger when an officer is off duty and then switches into that mode? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, Harold, I want to be a little cautious about talking about today's tragedy with Officer Ramsden, because I simply would be speculating about the facts. Mm-hmm. We're still waiting for that investigation to tell us more. But in terms of how we respond to any complaint like this today by, first of all, doing what we call a lethality review. And we do this with every domestic violence call. And we do a background check on the respondent if we can identify who that person is. Do they have a history of violence? Do they have a history of contacts with the system and with our SVAs? And we come up with a score. And we tally a score on a score sheet. And if that score tells us that this person has a propensity for violence or violence is really a potential, then we're going to have our tactical team assist our regular deputy's response to that incident. So that's how we approach it. Every domestic violence call is a potential for violence, and we treat it that way.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we are talking about deadly domestic violence, the risks that officers, sheriff's deputies face every day when they are called to respond to cases of domestic violence, which could very well be dangerous, as we have seen so many times in Prince George's County. If you have a question, if you have a comment about this issue, please give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We do understand that, and I know you may not be able to speak specifically to the suspect in a case like this, but just for the sake of argument, he did have several warrants out against him related to assault.
That's correct.
We do know that the Sheriff's Department has, over these past many years, been very, very good at arresting, picking up suspects, those who have warrants. Why was someone like the suspect today still at large?
Well, I don't know why. I can tell you that you're correct in saying that there were at least, I understand, two arrest warrants and one protective order, all of which we have been trying to serve repeatedly over the last days. But the gentleman has been actively evading apprehension. I know that the county police also have responded to that address and a number of times over the last week. And again, while I'm not certain about what they encountered at the residence when they arrived, but he was never arrested. He was not apprehended.
Mm-hmm. 202 319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about domestic violence calls and our police officers, our sheriff's deputies. Let me go to the phone lines. Let's talk to Brianna, calling from Clinton. Yes. Thanks for calling, Brianna. What's on your mind?
Hi, yes. I was just listening to what the gentleman was saying about when, you know, the most violent or potential violent times are when the moments of when the victim is looking to get out. I think that is true. I myself am a survivor of domestic violence. Unfortunately, I didn't get the police involved just because in my mind, I had that fear of, you know, getting other people involved in what I considered my mess. I know the officers are there for that reason, but I think that is a fear that also can lie in some of the victims' minds.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Spencer, did you want to comment on what she was just talking about?
It's such an important point that she makes, and I just want to respond to that directly. We have something called the Prince George's County Domestic Violence Fatality Review Team, and each year the Fatality Review Team reviews all of the incidents of domestic violence and tries to make an assessment of how government and advocates and other resources can best intervene to reduce and eliminate domestic violence. What the young lady said is so important because in 2016, what the Fatality Review told us was that in most of the cases involving domestic violence-related homicides and suicides, those persons never contacted the system. The majority of them never sought help. And so we did not have a record of them contacting the sheriff's office or social services or the police. And I want to respond to that by saying to everyone who can hear my voice, if you're in immediate danger, never hesitate to call 911. Don't worry about what other people think. If you're in a situation where you know the potential for violence is significant, if you have children, if this person is repeatedly violent, there are resources to help you. And so never hesitate to reach out and ask for help. The resources are there. You can call the Sheriff's Department, Department of Family Services, the police. But we have resources, and we want you to avail yourselves of them. Never hesitate to reach out for help.
Mrs. Spencer, stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue as we continue our discussion about those who protect and serve and addressing domestic violence calls. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Today, we continue our discussion about a domestic violence incident that appears to be at the center of today's tragic loss of a Prince George's County police officer. Domestic violence calls are often the most dangerous for responding officers. And tonight we drill down and take a look at some of the issues that have been impacting our community. If you have a question, if you have a comment, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me go back to the phone lines. Horatio calling from D.C. Horatio, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How you guys doing this evening?
Doing fine, thanks.
All right. Now, I just wanted to, just comment in on far as the father on the 5 o'clock news. He came out live, and he was stating that the accuser and the officer's son was having an affair with his wife. Mm. And the lady wasn't trying to hear it or whatever, and he was like, so she was telling him, like, that still don't give him a reason to kill, which is true, but I don't know. I think that officer kind of played part in that role, if that is true.
Well, Horatio, we can't certainly speak to that issue. I am quite sure as as you know, that this investigation is still very, very fluid. And I'm quite sure that some of the details regarding exactly what happened today are still part of the investigation that is, of course, with the police department and as well as the state's attorney. Quite honestly, as you probably know, it took quite some time for the police to even name the suspect because there was so much information that was coming out. But certainly, I appreciate your phone call and to that point, Mr. Spencer, it really doesn't matter what caused, the killing. The bottom line is that, domestic violence continues to be of major concern in Prince George's County. As you know, last year was one of the deadliest years for deadly domestic violence in the county.
Right. And so everything that you said, I agree with, and is accurate. But I would respond to Horatio by saying, one, just preliminarily, we know that Mr. Tendell, I believe that's his last name.
Mm-hmm. Glenn Tendell. Mm-hmm.
Has had a significant history of domestic violence with more than one person. And so this is behavior that goes back years. And the other thing that we know from experience and research is that when a batterer takes the step towards active violence and arms themselves with a weapon, that's usually premeditated. And so this is not something that's just a spur-of-the-moment thing. They've been thinking about victimizing that person by using a weapon or other means of violence. And it usually indicates a pattern that's built up over time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, while I can't answer, his question about potential relationship with Corporal Ramsden, and I can say it's true. It doesn't make a difference because this person, Mr. Tendell, had been apparently violent and engaged in domestic violence for some years.
Mm-hmm. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to introduce to this conversation Maryland State Delegate Angela Angel. She represents Prince George's County. She is also a domestic violence survivor, as well as a major advocate in the community and in the state capitol. Delegate Angel, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me as part of this really important conversation.
Talk to me a little bit about your thoughts when you began to hear about what happened today and the part that domestic violence may have played in the death of the officer and the suspect.
It's interesting because for almost every bill I've had that I've introduced in the House of Delegates, I've had the support of most of the law enforcement agencies in the county as well as around the state. And so one of the things they've always said when they testify is that when an officer responds to a domestic-related call, it's one of the most dangerous calls they ever go to. I don't have the exact statistic in front of me, but I believe the likelihood of them to be shot or killed when responding to a domestic dispute is higher than any other call that they get. So I wasn't surprised, and it's one of the things that we've had conversations about in regards to domestic violence. We had an event last year where it said, it's not just about it being inside the house, this affects our community. When you look at the state of Maryland and you look at Prince George's County, domestic violence has spilled over into our schools with the teacher that was shot and killed, and then it spilled over into the public arena because that same gentleman, after he killed his wife, he went and then began shooting at people in the Giant in Silver Spring. So we're showing when people are engaging in this type of acts, it's not just an in-house thing. It spills out into our community. It puts the public at large at risk, and especially puts our public safety responders at risk. And so it's one of the reasons why we've done things like House Bill 30 this year, which would be adding harassment and malicious destruction of property to protective orders so that we could get in there earlier and begin offering services as well as protecting the victims so that they can get away from these abusers and get space in between them that will equal safety, not just for them, but for everyone.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because House Bill 30 or what you suggested about it was something that we began to hear about last year, and it did not pass last year. And so are we bringing it back now, or give me kind of the thumbnail sketch of the history of that?
Well, I wish it had just been last year. I've introduced language of this to add harassment and malicious destruction of property since 2015, every year that I've been in the House. So this is the fourth iteration of it. But to be honest, this language has been around and this issue has been brought before the General Assembly ever since 2011. So this isn't a long time that coming that we've been talking about this. Last year, we also introduced a bill that unfortunately just died in the Judiciary Committee, but that was House Bill 81. And what that would have done is allowed for whenever an officer or a a mandated reporter, so a doctor, a teacher, whenever anyone heard that domestic violence was taking place and a child was present, it would have allowed them to alert social services so that they could respond to the household and offer services. And that bill, unfortunately, just died in the Judiciary Committee. And so now we're still fighting to get harassment and malicious destruction of property added to protective orders, because what all of this does is allow us to be introduced into homes earlier to help de-escalate violence and to help victims get away from their abusers.
It's interesting, Mr. Spencer, what the delegate is talking about, obviously, turning these issues into law. But, you know, the deputies at the Sheriff's Department, they don't need to see a piece of paper to know that those are real issues for people who are dealing with domestic violence.
Yeah, and I just want to thank Delegate Angel for her work in the General Assembly. And what she says is just true, and I know that Sheriff Melvin High is a staunch supporter of all of the efforts, not just her efforts, but House of Ruth and Maryland Network Against Domestic Violence are trying to, again, just create real practical ways to break the silence. But, yeah, and, you know, our officers and our sheriff's deputies are experiencing a number of things. You know, and the challenges from what they see day to day, door to door, can really be emotionally challenging for them. And now we're seeing the kind of overlay of family violence, domestic violence, with increased references for mental illness and substance abuse. And so this just compounds the challenges and the issues and the potential for violence that our officers are seeing day to day in these cases.
So what is, for example, the Prince George's County Sheriff's Department doing to provide support and resources for those deputies that are on the street day in, day out, and beginning to see these difficult trends increase?
Well, some of the things have been started by our own deputies in a very smart way, you know, kind of listening sessions, mutual support sessions. You know, we have the opportunity to give people a break, a rest, if you will. If they indicate they're kind of burned out, we may move them to a light duty assignment. Fortunately, the county provides resources for counseling, and we're grateful for those resources. But nothing really prepares you for that job of encountering sometimes horrific scenes like our people encounter sometimes unexpectedly, and our people just do a great job. And it's the job, as you've seen. Sometimes it can be routine, but every now and then it can be deadly. And that situation, you never know what's going to happen. And so our people train hard, They're professional, and we're very proud of what they do.
Delegate Angel, are there any things in the works in Annapolis to perhaps put more teeth behind protective orders? I know that since I've been in the journalism business, we've often heard them called paper shields, and that while they may legally mean very, very much, but as far as protecting the victims, there's not as much strength as I think a lot of people from all perspectives, they're just not as strong as they need to be.
Right. Well, so there's a couple of things, you know, and it's one of the things that I talk about when we're looking at laws in general. I always say, you know, unfortunately, it's very difficult to legislate evil and crazy, right?
Mm.
And you can't legislate away, you know, when someone is intent on committing a wrong. And so we can't necessarily always stop. But the strength of what the paper does, and one of the things that we have to make sure that we're doing is the enforcement of it, for women to be able to get it, because there is a certain amount, and to be able to get it sometimes earlier when we first notice that there are signs and issues, because what we have found is that when we get in there early in relationships and we get them to stop, we get the distance to be there, when we get women to be able to leave those situations, you know, it takes someone sometimes, I believe the statistics are 7 times to leave in a relationship where domestic violence is taking place. And that's one of the most dangerous times that there is. But when we're able to get these women and these families away safely and to allow them to help rebuild their lives, those are where we get positive outcomes, where we get it where, you know, we're getting quick responses to domestic violence calls or to violations of the protective order. And another thing that we really need to look at is making sure that if there are weapons, that they are turned in. And that's one of the bills that we've been talking about lately, is how do we increase and make sure that every time, even on preliminary orders, you know, the question's being asked, do you have a weapon in the house? And right now, I think what we're debating is, they may say yes, but it's deciding, okay, how do we make sure that that weapon is taken away? And, you know, if they say there's a weapon in the house, who's responsible for then making sure that they go out there and retrieve the weapon if the perpetrator does not turn it in? And so those are some of the ways that we look to strengthen the papers, because, you know, we don't want to diminish the fact that the importance of protective orders by saying they're just paper. We have to realize, no, this is a court order. This has the power of the judiciary of Maryland behind it. It has the power of our law enforcement agency facilities. This is a protective order, and it should do just that. Now, we can't necessarily make it do in all of those instances, but we want to make sure we're responding when there's a violation, and that judges are enforcing those orders. And the moment you violate, if you violate and you're causing danger, that you're put away to make people understand that this is a serious matter and that you will be dealt with seriously, to kind of calm them down in the earlier instances before they become so enraged and that they commit, you know, murder. Mm-hmm. Because what most of these instances are, they are crimes of passion.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's I got so angry, and then, you know, and if you sometimes when you talk to people, you know, the perpetrators later, they say, I just got so mad, I saw red, and they don't necessarily even fully remember what happened. Let me hold
you there, because I've got to take a break, but I do want to pick up on that issue. And if Mr. Spencer can stay with us on the other side, I have a question related to that as well, as we try to, not only in this conversation, but for departments, police, and sheriffs, and lawmakers, try to reduce these domestic violence numbers. We'll be back in just a moment.
The 90s and 2000s.
When the end was just...
Channel 141, I'm Harold Fisher. We continue to discuss domestic violence issues in our community and the dangerous job that law enforcement officers have to do when they are called to address a domestic violence call. Mr. Spencer, Delegate Angel was talking about these crimes of passion, domestic violence, whether they unfortunately may end in the death of someone or just the horrific violence that ends in injury. If you could speak to someone who right now is seething over something, man or woman, but have yet to go back to the old home where their ex happens to be, what do you tell them to avoid having to come up against a sheriff's deputy or a police officer? How do they move through that and not have to encounter an officer?
Well, Harold, that's an excellent point. And one of the things that Sheriff Melvin Heisman really trying to promote are services for batterers. One of the things we think that is lacking in the efforts to break the cycle of domestic violence is, while we have correctly done more to protect families and victims, which are overwhelmingly women and children, the men who predominantly act out violently, we still have to work with them. They still are fathers and sons and husbands. And there's got to be a response that says, you too have to learn how to break the cycle of violence, and you have to do your part. And so this is something I think is a growing conversation. We've talked with a number of faith leaders in the community. We're talking with the social services agencies. And it's something that I think we're late getting at, but it's important. I also want to say that we have something called the Family Justice Center. And the Family Justice Center is a building adjacent to the main courthouse campus in Upper Marlboro. And the FJC is a place where victims can come and get a full menu of wraparound services. They can talk to one of our SBAs. They can talk to Department of Family Services representatives, the House of Ruth. We can refer them to other social services agencies. We can give them links to the public schools. If their children have been negatively impacted by this and they need additional help. So the FJC is an important concept. It's a one-stop shop trying to give people everything they need and assistance to break the cycle of violence in one place so they don't have to spend so much time going all over the place trying to deal with this issue that centers on family violence. And the last thing I want to say is that, protective orders and peace orders are paper, but in my experience, that paper can be very powerful because, as Delegate Angel pointed out, that paper allows law enforcement to enforce that. And if those orders are violated, those persons can be prosecuted criminally. Lastly, breaking the cycle is about education for us, teaching people about the signs of domestic violence, what it means. And particularly, we're finding this important for younger people in the dating world, in school. We're seeing more domestic violence among children. And so education, support, early intervention, these are all the things that in the Office of the Sheriff we're trying to provide, and along with our partners in domestic violence advocacy and treatment.
Delegate Angel, absolutely. Delegate Angel, your story is no secret that you were on the receiving end of domestic violence, and obviously you've turned that difficult portion of your life into action. But even situations like today, I'm sure at some point remind you of where you've come from. Personally, what have you learned from your difficult experience?
You know, for me, I think there's a point, and I always reference back, there was always a point, a very low point, when you kind of reach the end and you're looking around and you're thinking, you know, this is not what my life is supposed to be. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, I thought I did everything right. You know, I'm an attorney. I've advocated and I've helped women that are in this situation. Like, how did I get here? And one of the things that I always remember is in that very moment, my spirit, I'm a woman of faith, and I remember the spirit speaking to me and saying, this isn't about you. And for me, ever since then, whenever I've reached, you know, low points in my life, that's what has always been, you know, the answer from my spirit is this isn't about you, which is why I fight, you know, in the House of Delegates the way that I do. It's why that I offer the bills that I offer. Everything that actually, you know, Mr. Spencer just said are things that, you know, HB 81, which, you know, unfortunately it passed out of the House last year, but it did not pass out of this year. One of the things that it comes from is it actually comes from my experience in New York, where because we are alerted to DV by all of our mandated reporters, we are in houses offering those services. Like he said, when it's activated based on a social service case, we can have a judge based off of a social service response order an abuser to abuser counseling, which is somewhat very difficult to be done in the way that our current Maryland setup is, because you can't necessarily always order it for protective order or even in criminal cases. And so when that, you know, and that bill just died, and one of the things I was trying to get as we were fighting for it is to get people to understand what this does is get us in houses earlier. You know, HB 30 that is still up, a huge part of that is part of the bill says that it puts in an education requirement so that schools will have discussions on healthy relationships. So when you're asking what do I take away with me now, I carry that woman who was lost and alone and battered in a room and didn't know where her children were. I carry her with me every place that I go. I carry her in the House. And as I run for the Senate, I'm carrying her there because I know what it feels like. But I use that to fuel the advocacy. I use that to build and to make laws that I know will make an impact and change and help improve the situation for the women and the men that are suffering under this in our county. And I think that's what we're put here on earth to do. Every time you go through something, it's to build you and so that you can take that experience and make the world a better place. And that's all that I can strive to do.
This happened, today's unfortunate incident happened in Prince George's County, but as you just spoke about House Bill 30 as it relates to destruction of property and harassment, could it be that today's incident could be heard in Annapolis as that bill moves through the halls of our legislative system?
Absolutely. You know, I think it's one of the things that, you know, we just had the other case, which was actually we work in the same department. The young lady, it was that happened in Charles County, but people don't realize she was actually a Prince George's County worker, the young woman who was killed by her husband after she had just got a protective order.
Just last month, I believe, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, just last month. And that she was actually a worker. We both worked for the Department of Environment. And so she was a Prince George's County employee, even though it happened in Charles. You know, and so when we're hearing these bills down in Annapolis, we take all of that information and why it's important for advocates and for people and just everyday citizens to contact your legislators, contact the members of the Judiciary Committee. If you go to my website, advocateangel.com, or if you find me on any social media, all of my handles are MD Advocate Angel. We tell people how they can advocate in Annapolis, whether it's just sending emails, whether it's tweets and Facebook, or whether it's actually setting up meetings or even doing old-fashioned sit-ins and mm-hmm. saying, we will not move until you make these protections available to victims of domestic violence. Right now, this is in the hands of the people. We serve the people. And if the people require us to protect the women of Maryland, then that's what we will do. So that's why I encourage people, come down to Annapolis, contact your legislator, tweet, Facebook, whatever you need to do to raise the awareness on this and to demand that they pass these types of legislations like HB 30 to create these protections for victims of domestic violence.
And Mr. Spencer, I've got about 20 seconds left. I'll let you have that, the last thought on this discussion.
I would just reiterate, for every person who can hear my voice, if you're in immediate danger, please call 911. If you're a person who wants to escape violence, you're in a tough situation, you can call the Family Justice Center, 301 780-8000. Or you can call our office, the Office of the Sheriff, 301-780-8600. But in all cases, we don't judge you. We just want you to ask for help. Please reach out for help. Never hesitate to ask for help. There are resources and great people who are ready and willing and able to help you help yourself to break the cycle of violence.
I want to thank both of you, Maryland State Delegate Angela Angel and Mark Spencer, Inspector General with the Prince George's County Sheriff's Department. I really appreciate you spending some time with us and talking about this very important issue, and we will certainly be reaching out again as we move forward. So again, thank you both so much.
Thank
I appreciate
you, Kyle.
It.
Really
sure.
Appreciate it.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, February 21st. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for the connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.